Yeah. Let's turn up. We're gonna turn up going into the fall.
Here it is, a groove slightly transformed. Just a bit of a break from the norm. Just a little something to break the monotony of all that hardcore dance that has gotten to be a little bit out of control. It's cool to dance, but what about a groove that soothes and moves romance? Give me a soft, subtle mix. And if it ain't broke, then don't try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past. Adjust the bass and let the Alpine blast. Pop in my CD and let me run a rhyme. And put your car on cruise and lay back, cause it's summertime.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
The views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded program are not necessarily those of Henry Ford College or WHFR. Good afternoon, this is WHFR Dearborn, and you're listening to the program called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Reverend Eileen Patra, and she is the senior minister at Unity of Livonia, which is a spiritual center located in Livonia, Michigan. Good afternoon, Reverend. How are you?
I'm doing great, Mike. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad you could do the show. Now, I'm just curious, how did you get involved with Unity of Livonia?
Well, I was leading a small church up in West Branch, Michigan, but I lived in Royal Oak, which is much closer to Livonia, of course, and I attended a local minister's luncheon, and at that luncheon, I discovered that the ministers at Unity of Livonia were retiring and moving to Texas, and somehow this little voice inside or somewhere behind my right shoulder started whispering to me, Livonia, Livonia. And after some deep thought and consideration, I decided to submit my resume. And I was called in to be one of the four candidates who came in and gave a talk and a workshop at the church. And this all started in August of 2012, and in January of 2013, I received a call from the board telling me that they had selected me as their next minister.
Okay. And how long have you been at Unity of Livonia?
I've been there for almost 6 years. I started on March 17th of 2013, which was my father's birthday.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that makes it really special, right? Yeah.
St. Patrick's Day, and my dad's name was Patrick, and so kind of indelibly in my head.
Right. No, it seems to, that it converged on that date. I mean, obviously, that's easy to remember, I would think.
Sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now, I understand that you're retiring, and why is that?
Well, I'm retiring from full-time church ministry at Livonia. I'm not retiring in the sense of I'm going to go do hobbies and all of that. But I've been writing for some time, and I started writing a book last year. And the book has just been calling me and calling me, as well as the thoughts about doing workshops around the book and around some other books that I have in the works. And it just began to occur to me that I couldn't do either ministry justice by trying to continue to do both. And so I've let the board know at Unity of Livonia that I would like to retire, and they've begun the search for the next spiritual leader. And this week I actually reduced my hours to part-time so that I could work on the book more. And they were very agreeable and very supportive of that.
Mm-hmm. So this was Spirit talking to you, that it was time to let that part of your life go so you could concentrate on your writing?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And today is, you know, this is the first week of part-time, and I'm up here at the cabin, and I wrote an entirely new chapter today, and I was very excited. A whole chapter in one day was just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's got to be invigorating, I would think.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you write, is it automatic writing, or do you feel Spirit coming through you as you write?
Well, it's wonderful when that occurs. It's not always that simple. Sometimes, you know, sometimes I sit down to write and there's just nothing, you know. And other times I come and I sit down and it just flows like it did today. Today, I honestly felt as though the story was already written and I was just transcribing it. But other times, it takes a little more effort than that, and certainly editing and research take quite a bit of time, too.
Mm-hmm. Right. So at times you feel like you are a channel, but other times, I guess it must be a struggle. You have writer's block once in a while?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty normal thing for writers. You know, there's just times when it's hard. It's actually hard sometimes to just sit down and pay attention to that. But this was a very special day.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you normally write, do you sit down and you try to say you're going to write for X number of hours a day regardless? I mean, sometimes you get a lot done, sometimes not so much. Do you always try to put in the same number of hours every day as you're writing?
I do. Actually, I have a schedule, and I'm developing a new schedule based on my new hours. So that I sit down at the computer, and even if I don't feel like writing, I start writing. And even if nothing comes through for this book, I write whatever comes to mind, which is a really good practice. Sometimes that turns into something else, or sometimes something that I didn't know was going to be in the book comes out of me. But it's really a good practice to sit down at least for a small period of time every day.
Mm-hmm.
My new schedule, I expect to have several hours, a couple of days a week to work on the book.
Right. It just takes a little self-discipline, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure that, you know, that people think about the life of a writer as being, you know, always just sitting in this wonderful place and the words just flow. And
right.
And that does happen occasionally, but not all the time.
Right. Well, they think that, oh, you work at home and you can go and make your cup of coffee or whatever beverage it is you want. And, you know, you can just relax.
Sure.
And it's not always that way, though, right?
Sure. My husband and I are, we're both artists, and So I spent a lot of time with visual arts before I got involved in this. And we used to do art fairs years ago, and we would be so exhausted by the time we got to these art fairs from all the work we did to get there. And people would walk by and say things like, oh, the life of the artist, you know, thinking that we were so relaxed. We were just exhausted.
Yeah, right. They don't always know what goes on behind the scenes or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, exactly, right.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, tell us a little bit about the book. What is it called, and what's the gist of the book?
Well, the book is called The Mystical Ark. Subtitle is A Vessel of Blessings. And it is a book of spiritual fiction. It was originally intended to be a compilation of essays that I was writing about a metaphysical interpretation of the Ten Commandments. And I woke up in the middle of the night when I was just beginning this book. I had some of the chapters kind of roughed out and some articles written that I thought I would develop. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I had this vision of a scene in the desert where an expedition discovers the ark, and the ark doesn't have tablets in it. The ark rather pulls the parties of the expedition into a mystical experience.
Mm-hmm.
And in that mystical experience, they discover just this incredible deeper understanding of the words that people have always assumed were on the tablets that are in the ark.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really supposed to be just a little vignette to open up the story of essays, but the story of the expedition took on a whole life of its own.
Mm-hmm. Did that surprise you?
Yes, and I actually fought it for a while, because originally, after that, as it started to develop, I had a complete manuscript completed that went from the fictional story to the essay to the fictional story to the essay. And I thought, oh, this is so cool, you know, because people will read this and then they'll want to read the essay. And I gave it to an editor and some beta readers who said, I want the story. Get rid of the essays. So I pulled those out and spent quite a bit of time thinking about how I would change those essays into characters and dialogue. And that's what I've spent the last several months working on.
Mm-hmm. And again, this is something that you've always wanted to do. Have you always wanted to write?
Let me just say I've always been a writer of some sort. Even when I was young, I was, it was both involved in the visual arts and in writing. I wrote a lot of poetry at the age where a lot of young people write poetry. And I had a neighbor who worked for an advertising company. And he took my book of poetry in to work with him one day. And I had drawn a lot of pictures to go along with the poetry, and I thought the pictures were great, and that's why I wanted him to take it there, so they could tell me what a great artist I was and that I would have a career in the arts. And he brought it back and he said, you really ought to think about a career in writing. You ought to be a copywriter.
Yeah, so that kind of quashed that dream, right?
Well, it didn't. I still kept trying to be, you know.
So anyway, they saw the artwork and they just didn't care for it? Was that the comment or what?
Well, they thought the artwork was fine, but they really liked my writing.
Uh-huh.
And really thought that there was potential there. It was a long time before I recognized it. I think really actually ministry led me to more serious writing, you know, in writing talks and writing articles, and which developed into essays. And then suddenly they were becoming the pieces of books.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have this mystical arc that I'm working on, but I have several other books that are in a beginning stage that are ready. Once I get this one complete, they're all calling me to hurry up, finish this one.
Yeah, right. So let's get on with the show, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right. So, again, your artwork, does that come through? I mean, is that, you know, you're just a channel for that as well?
I really feel that... the creativity that I used to pour into painting and into fabric design. I worked a lot with fiber sculpture and things like that. But I pour a lot of that energy into my speaking and my writing. So, and the message, you know, the underlying message has always been the same. It's about our spiritual potential and about... you know, just the wholeness of life. And my message is really, I don't think the message has ever really changed. It's the way that I express it changes.
Mm-hmm. So just kind of whatever moves you in a way and you just go with the flow, so to speak?
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, it comes out in different ways. You know, my Sunday talks, I enjoy speaking. I enjoy the Sunday talks a lot. And, that's really stretched me, I think. Coming up with a new talk every Sunday, it's a very interesting thing to do.
Right. No, I'm sure it's challenging. I mean, it's every week. Yeah. That's the thing. It's just not like once a month or something. I mean, you really have got to put some time and effort into just coming up with things to talk about every Sunday.
Yeah, and to hone it to a place where I feel good about it, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a work of the heart, too. I probably put way more hours into it than I'm expected to, I guess I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But I love what I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's important. Not too many people can say that.
That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. And quickly, I just want to remind everybody that you are listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Reverend Eileen Patra. She is the senior minister at Unity of Livonia, which is a spiritual center located in Livonia, Michigan. Now, when you decided to do this, was it a tough decision, or did you pretty much know that it was time and you just thought, well, this is going to be easy? I mean, I know there's going to be some time where it's going to take to get your replacement, but did you pretty much decide that, you know, I can do this and that was it? I mean, it wasn't something where you, you know, were tossing and turning about it at night or anything like that?
Well, I have to say it was more of a toss and turn kind of an experience. It hasn't been easy because I really love the ministry. I love Unity of Livonia. I love the people there. And, you know, there's a part of my heart that will always be there. And it's very, very hard to do, to leave. And yet it's almost impossible not to. So I have experienced a little bit of feeling torn for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't come real quickly. It took a very long time, a lot of consideration, a lot of discussion between my husband and I. But between the book and honestly, you know, my husband was very ill about a year and a half ago. And I had to take a leave of absence to help him during that time. And that experience for some reason, it really brought it home to us that we needed to do some things that we had always planned on doing and had put off.
Right. Sometimes that happens and you realize that if you really want to do something that, you know, you just have to move on and take care of that situation, whatever it might be. Sometimes it gives you a chance to reflect. I mean, it may seem like it's a bad time or it's some kind of mistake or something, but sometimes it turns out to be what you need to go through, so you need to find out what you need to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's what that whole experience really was for us. So, you know, it's a lot of time of reflection. And, you know, what I believe is, you know, of course, I'm all about metaphysics and all about there's always more than one story going on. So on the outside, there was a story of cancer and sepsis infection and physical challenges. On the inside, there was healing going on for both of us that was far beyond the physical. And there was just spiritual growth that was happening for both of us. It's difficult to explain, but it was an experience that the physical part neither of us would ever want to experience again. But what we experienced on another level is priceless.
Right, you felt you needed to go through that to kind of decide what to do as far as your futures are concerned, right?
Well, that too, yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Dr. Wayne Dyer has said things like that sometimes, where you think it's something drastic that, you know, it's an illness or you lose a job or whatever it might be that gets you to stop and reassess things and maybe make some different decisions, that they turn out to be a blessing in disguise sometimes.
Yes. And you know, I always feel that it's your spiritual being just knocking on your door saying, come on, let's go. It's time to do this. You've been waiting long enough. And so, you know, if you continue to ignore it, the message gets louder and more challenging until you finally pay attention and listen.
Right, right. And sometimes that's hard to do, though, because, I mean, sometimes you think that you have to do the right thing, whatever that might be.
Yeah, that's especially in this situation because, you know, like I said, we've grown so close to this spiritual community. And I know that people there, they're very happy for us and they're sad that we're leaving. And we feel the same way. We're excited and yet we're sad about, you know, the idea of leaving. We anticipate that somehow we will continue to be connected and involved at Unity of Livonia in some way. We don't know what that looks like. And so it's a stepping out into the unknown for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what I teach. So,
right. That can be scary.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. and I teach that, you know, I teach others to walk that scary road to experience more joy and fulfillment in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's that's what I'm being called to demonstrate.
Right. Well, that's just it, too. I mean, you can't just, you know, you got to walk the walk, just not talk the talk, right?
Exactly.
That's what it comes down to. Well, no, because people look to you and they think, wow, you know, yeah, she's talking about it, but she's not doing it herself. So sometimes mm-hmm. you have to lead the way and set the example.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And getting back to your book now, it involves a lot about the Ten Commandments, doesn't it?
It does, but it involves an entirely different look. And at least for me, it seems like an entirely different look. Not that there's anything wrong with the Ten Commandments. You know, I always think it's pretty interesting that we live in a world that doesn't want to post those anywhere. But that's a story in itself. But, you know, they're great rules to live by, but there's so much more. And, you know, the book really first came about, to be honest with you, it came about when someone, a member at the church, asked me one day if Unity believed in the Ten Commandments. And I thought about it. It was a question no one had ever asked me before, and it wasn't something I had really paid a lot of attention to in terms of my talks or my spiritual teaching. And so I began a series of talks on the commandments and on a metaphysical interpretation of them. And I think I got through three or four before I found myself talking about something else. And another member said, when are you going to do the rest of those talks? Because the world really needs this. And it was that really, really birthed this idea. And let me give you an example of what I think of as a metaphysical or deeper spiritual meaning of one of the commandments. You take thou shalt not kill. Now, obviously, this is a commandment that, you know, is a piece of social governance. And without it, there'd be total anarchy and the world would be even more dangerous than it is now. And, you know, not only is it a part of religious cultures, it's a part of social cultures. It's just not unacceptable to kill one another. But look at it more deeply. What does it mean to kill? To kill means to end something prematurely. Like you might kill a motor, or a director might kill a scene in a movie or a play. But right. What we teach is that life is eternal, and that we're all expressions of the infinite, omnipresent source of life. And nothing can end that. God is infinite, meaning always alive. And God is the essence of who we are. And so that can't be killed. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, someone can't destroy or harm a body so much that the body can't be repaired. But the essence of the person that inhabits that body can't be killed. So I look at those words and I think, so thou shall not kill, does that mean you better not or you'll be punished? Or does that mean that it's impossible to kill? And there's a whole world of discussion between those two thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, kind of what you touched on, you really can't, I mean, you can destroy a body, but you can't really kill a soul.
Exactly. You know, that's not possible because the soul is a part of the essence of life, which I call God. And you can't kill God, mm-hmm. although people seem to think that that they can, but no, that's not true. And so these are some of the thoughts that take me into a deeper reflection on that. And, you know, another way of looking at that is, you know, Jesus taught that whatever we give, we receive. And a lot of times we look at that as a statement about prosperity, you know, that you should give so that you can create a space to receive. And while that's true, it also means that whatever we give out, whatever energy we give out, we receive, that comes back to us, whether that's a positive loving energy or a hateful angry energy. And so if one were to kill someone, in some way, they would be killing a part of themselves. Now, you can't kill anything, but you can certainly harm it. So this takes me into a whole line of thought about, you know, we can never be disconnected from our source, which is God. but we can believe that we are. And so someone who pulls the trigger and kills another person, in that action, in a sense, kills a part of themselves, because they create a greater perception of separation between themselves and Source. So it's not that God punishes anyone, but the result of removing oneself or believing oneself as being that separate from God causes a person to act in a way that reinforces their belief in that separation.
Right. Well, it's cause and effect. I mean, there are karmic, you know, repercussions that people might have to take care of in a different lifetime, yeah. You know, even though that they think that they're doing the right thing this lifetime, it's not really so, is it?
Well, right. And karma is just another way of saying that same thing. What you give, you eventually receive. And so if you're giving life and you're giving positive, loving energy, you continue to experience that not only on the spiritual level, but in your physical life.
Mm-hmm. Right. But the important thing is to realize that we are eternal and that it doesn't really matter what you do, because we're not going to destroy a soul. We're just going to destroy a body. So are you trying to teach people that, you know, why do that? Because it doesn't make a difference anyway, really, because you can, again, kill a body, but you can't kill a soul.
Well, you know, I have to be really careful in how I discuss this. And so this is a very, it's a very intricate chapter in or several parts of the book. Because, you know, I don't want to ignore that either. I mean, certainly all you're doing is harming yourself if you're harming another. So certainly you don't want to throw away the baby with the bathwater. I look at the Ten Commandments that we post on walls and that we imagine on carved in stone tablets as really the kindergarten version of a greater law. Mm-hmm. And so you don't throw away what you learned in kindergarten. You know, you keep that and you build on that. And so it's not about not paying attention to those. It's about taking those to a deeper level. Of course, you shouldn't kill someone. And in effect, you really can't. And in fact, the only thing you do is kill a piece of yourself.
All right. I just want to take a quick time out to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. My name is Mike Holloway. I'm the host of the program. And my special guest this month is Reverend Eileen Patra. And she is the senior minister at Unity of Livonia, which is a spiritual center located in Livonia, Michigan. So going forward now, are you going to do the other, the different commandments? Are you going to touch on all of them?
I do. And in the book, this is touched on by many different experiences of the characters, and there's two primary characters, Elena and Zach. And Elena is a painter who has a long time friendship with Zach, who is an archaeologist, and so she accompanies him on a lot of expeditions, and partly because she's an excellent photographer, and also because she's very good with a brush and very good at working with artifacts. So most of the story is told through Elena's eyes, and she continues to have mystical experiences after the initial one that take her into some past experiences, into some I don't know how to say it, illustrated vision of these principles that lie behind the commandments. And she also has some very in-depth discussions with another character who becomes her mentor, but is possibly also an adversary. There are some dangerous and unexpected twists in the plot.
Mm-hmm. And do you try to do that to keep people interested? I mean, you want to keep them kind of turning the pages, obviously, but is that part of the plan? Or again, is that just something that comes to you? Or is that something that you've really plotted out?
Some of it has been plotted out. And, you know, some of it comes off of some suggestions from the beta readers who suggested that I create some characters. And, you know, besides Elena and Zach, who could have some conversations. So I wasn't just preaching with the book, but having conversations or experiences that would get those same points across, but in a more interesting way. And once I really started to do that, the characters began to have a life of their own. Elena has, she has an incredible life of her own. And, you know, she's unique. She's a figment of my imagination. And yet she has characteristics in some ways of people, of different people I've known. And Eric, who is the man who maybe is her mentor and maybe is not, he also, once he started to take shape in my mind, he became a pretty multidimensional character as well.
Mm-hmm. Do you surprise yourself sometimes the way the direction of the book goes?
Oh, absolutely. I never intended to write fiction. and yet, as I was sitting there today and it was just sort of pouring out of me, I went, this is pretty good. I think this is going to work.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's good. You know, keeps you interested too, right?
Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm. Now, when is this book going to be published? Do you have any target date in mind?
I'm anticipating spring of 2019. I hope to have it ready for an editor soon after the first of the year. And if I keep going at this rate, I should be able to make that deadline.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Well, now that you're going to be kind of semi-retired, I mean, you're not really retired from life, but you're retired from active...
Yeah.
An active role in the church. So, I mean, that obviously lets you really focus on what you need to do as far as the writing goes, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's pretty exciting.
Right. Now, does your husband and your family support you in this?
Oh, they do. My daughter, who is also a writer, has been extremely helpful. She was one of my beta readers, and she and I have a really unique relationship. She's able to take on that role and be very objective. Generally don't use a family member for a beta reader, but because she also is an artist and a writer, she was able to put on that hat and do an excellent job. My husband is very supportive. He's only read the first, I think probably about the first 20 pages, but he's excited to read the rest. And my son is also supportive, and they've been asking me for a long time, when are you going to retire, Mom? When are you going to retire?
Yeah, was that a hint or what?
It was a blatant hint.
Right. Well, that's good, though. I mean, they have your best interests at heart, obviously, and they're just trying to see you better yourself, I'm sure.
Yeah, they do.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are some of the other things you have in the works? You said that you have some other things. I mean, are these just going to be essays that you're doing, or what else is going on?
I believe that the essays that were in the original manuscript will eventually form a sort of a follow-up book that could be used for workshops. So that's somewhat in the works. I also have another book in the works called Riding the Crocodile. And that's a book about overcoming fear.
Mm-hmm.
That book has some substantial elements ready to go. And I've done some workshops already with that material. So that may be the next one that gets my attention.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think that's important because it's hard to get over your fears in life. I mean, it's easy to think, well, I really want to do that. But when you really start to think about your fears, it's like that's what holds you back. And I'm sure this is probably addressing that, right, where you just have to push through boundaries and, in essence, just go for it. And I know you must feel that you have to push yourself to attain some type of success, right?
Well, you do. And fear is, you know, we think of fear as such a bad thing, but fear is also a good thing. You know, it's part of what keeps us safe and keeps us alive. But fear is also something that once triggered can take on a life of its own. And it really comes from the part of the brain, that some people refer to as the reptilian brain, which is where the whole idea of the crocodile comes from.
Right.
And so it can take on this kind of life of its own that can cause you to, they always talk about fight or flight, but the other one is freeze. It can cause you to just freeze and be unable to do anything. And so learning ways to acknowledge the good part of fear, that part of it that keeps you safe, but be able to ride that fear and to rise above it is essential to your growth, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, and all levels of life.
Mm-hmm. So that's something, though, that a person is able to overcome, in your opinion? I mean, again, it's not always easy to do. It's a lot easier to, instead of writing a book or whatever it might be that you feel you need to do, it's a lot easier to read the newspaper or, check out some movie or something. You can think of a million excuses not to do something, but you just have to discipline yourself. Is that correct?
Well, it's discipline, and I believe it's really reaching in and believing in yourself and believing that there is something in you that is an important gift to the world, and that your presence and the gift that you carry in the world is so vital that you have to overcome this. It's part of why you're here. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's true for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And, many, many people go through life without ever realizing that or actualizing that.
Right.
And so that's, to me, that's a work of the heart too. Is if there's a way that I can assist people in overcoming that and learning how to grow into who they were called here to be, then that's what I'm here to be.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, again, it's easier said than done sometimes. And I think people, if they're honest with themselves, they know in their heart of hearts and their soul of souls what it is they should be doing. But again, fear holds them back, whatever that reason might be. But it's the pushing forward to get over that fear. How do you do that?
Okay. Let me think for a second about how to respond to that.
I mean, what would you suggest? I mean, for somebody to get over their fear, I mean, it's easier, again, like I said, to think about what you should be doing or kind of know what you want. But what would your advice be to somebody that wants to push through or push past the fear and actually do what they're supposed to?
Well, the first word that comes to mind is distance. I'm going to go to the crocodile book for a second here, that when a crocodile trainer works with a crocodile, the smart ones, the ones that live a long time, know enough to keep their distance from the crocodile. And so I take that as a symbol of what it is we need to do when something that causes great fear comes up for us. We have to give ourselves some distance from it so we can look at it from a different perspective and recognize it for what it is. It's the little me or the little ego saying, watch out, watch out, watch out. And there's a part of us that can say, yeah, I did. I noticed that. Thank you. Be quiet now because I'm going to do this. And the alternative of that is to be swallowed by it. And my mother was hit by a car when I was about 11 years old. And she lived, but it was a very serious accident. She was in the hospital for over a month, and in the recovery at home was probably a couple months long in a hospital bed with a walker. And it was pretty tremendous. And she had been crossing Woodward Avenue, and a car had been timing the light and didn't see her and hit her full force. And, she went for 40 years unable to cross the street because of her fear.
Right.
And, that was an extremely limiting experience for her. I mean, there were so many things she couldn't do. She got a job where she took the bus to work, but she had to be picked up because she couldn't cross the street on the way back, you know? Mm-hmm. And so there were so many things that she missed because of that. And it took her 40 years to finally say, this is it. I want to get from here to there, and I'm going to make myself take this next step.
Right. Well, that can be hard to do. But, I mean, what is your advice, though? I mean, how do you get people motivated to get past that fear?
Well, like I said, first of all, I believe you have to have some distance. And then you have to have this perspective that puts that fear in its place. And the other thing I suggest is that you look past the fear, that you look at something else. When a crocodile grabs its prey, it spins, and it spins to the bottom of the river. And it spins to the bottom of the river partly because of the digestive process, but also to disorient its prey. And if you think about spinning, think about ballerinas and about ice skaters who go into these great big spins. The way that they keep their balance is to focus on something that doesn't move. So here's my suggestion when you reach that fear. Not only do you distance yourself so you can gain a new perspective, but you focus on something positive. Just focus on something else, something that doesn't move. Well, there's one thing that doesn't move in all of us, and that's spirit. And so meditating, but spending time in the silence, spending time with your own spiritual nature and just listening for spirit within is the way that we spiritually focus on the spot that doesn't move.
Mm-hmm. Do you think meditation could help with that?
I do, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So meditation, visualization, you know, gaining a new perspective, creating some support groups. Another, not book, but a workshop that I'm in the midst of creating is about developing the inner coach. You know, we all have this inner crocodile or monkey mind that we tend to call it that's always telling us what we can't do. The workshop I want to create is one that develops an inner voice that tells us what we can do.
Mm-hmm. And that's not always easy to do, though, right?
No, of course not, because that little monkey mind voice has been going on for a long time. It's got a pretty good hold. It's got a real loud speaker.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also we tend to listen to a lot of the negative messages that we send to ourselves rather than trying to think positive, and that's not, again, an easy thing to do all the time.
Right. And, you know, and like I said, those have been going on for a long time. You know, we have these tapes that run in our heads that, you know, some of them started when we were very young. You know, maybe we picked them up for our families or from, you know, perhaps a teacher who wasn't, you know, particularly happy with their work or happy with our work. And you know, those tapes play over and over again, and certain things in our lives will trigger them. So, number one, you've got to pay attention and notice them. Number two, you need to learn to not only know what they are and notice them, but to replace them with a more positive thought about yourself. Recognize that they're not true, that the mm-hmm. truth of you is so much more powerful than that.
Right. Well, I also think that sometimes you have to go back and look and kind of see what that other person might have been going through. I mean, maybe they thought they were trying to help you, and maybe it was basically really hurting you in the long run.
Right. You know, I think of some of those momisms and dadisms. You know, my parents certainly meant to teach me good things with their momisms and dadisms. You know, my dad used to say, "What do you think, money grows on trees?"
And, yeah.
I grew up to write a Sunday talk that said, "Yes, Dad, money does grow on my tree."
Yeah, so
it was
there,
a talk
huh?
About prosperity.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, paybacks, right? You know.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know,
he
I mean,
must have approved because my first day at Unity of Livonia was his birthday.
Yeah, right. Okay. So it all fit, right?
It all fit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Thank you for sharing that with us about your book and your writing. And I just want to touch upon an event that's coming up at the Unity of Livonia. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. We are about to celebrate our fifth annual Body, Mind, Spirit Holistic Festival. And it's coming up on Saturday, October 6th. For us, the outer expression of that is it's our annual fundraiser that helps us with our capital fund and building renovations. But the other piece of that is the opportunity for us to provide a space for people to meet different healers, different modalities of healing, to meet with vendors who sell a variety of holistic holistic supplements and holistic foods, and just and some amazing free presentations that are part of the day. So we're very excited about this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. It's very invigorating. I mean, once you get going and the event starts, and I guess it can be rather challenging, but yet exciting, right?
A little bit challenging, but at the same time, you know, this is our fifth annual event, and we spend the better part of the year planning the event. We start in March to put on this event in October, and the first year we did it, I think we had all of 6 weeks to put it on, and Penny Golden, an absolute saint of a woman, who is the publisher of Body, Mind, Spirit Guide, was the one who brought the idea to us. And she said, oh, what's 6 weeks? We can make it happen. You know, and we did. We pulled it off, and it was such a wonderful event that we decided we would put a whole lot more effort into it. And what I understand and what I hear from the vendors is it's just their favorite event. They feel so supported that they are delighted to return year after year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's important. You know, you got to keep people happy, and if they keep returning, that's a good thing.
Yeah, it really is. And there are some who've been with us from the very beginning, and yet at the same time, we also have some new vendors. And this year's presentations are really exciting. We have something new this year. We have a keynote speaker. In the past, the presentations have all been about 20 minutes long. But we looked at things a little differently this year, and we have Shandan Paramaswara, who is a pranic healing teacher who teaches throughout the region and actually throughout the United States, is coming in, and he's doing a one-hour introduction to pranic healing and then doing some pranic healing demonstrations in our sanctuary.
Mm-hmm. And this is going to be, what, an hour or so? Or how long is it going to be?
Yeah, his presentation is an hour long. Some of them are 40 minutes, some are 45. So he'll be doing the pranic healing. We also have Dr. Ranjani and Balaji Iyer doing a self-development and joy through heartfulness presentation. And we have Betty Hines. Now, Betty Hines has been with us before, and she is presenting about minerals as the missing element in almost everyone's diet. She has a line of minerals and supplements called Youngevity. And I have to tell you, my husband used some of these products in his healing. After a lung biopsy, he had a near-fatal sepsis infection from the lung biopsy.
Wow.
And that actually took longer to heal. It was a bigger deal than the actual lung surgery, which happened quite some time later. But some of those products were things that we used. We actually used every modality we could think of to help him in that healing. So, you know, he was receiving distance Reiki from our healing ministry at the church. Certainly, you know, prayer from our prayer chaplains, and everybody at the church was keeping him in prayer. We were using affirmations and frankincense oil, as well as just an amazing medical staff at the Ann Arbor VA hospital.
Mm-hmm.
So And really, I believe that the longevity supplements that he was taking really helped his body to respond to all of the wholeness energy that we were helping him to reconnect with.
Mm-hmm. Did that surprise you? I mean, the results that you got with some of those products?
Not really. You know, I mean, I certainly had faith that I knew he was whole, and I knew that it was just a matter of, first of all, time, and second of all, his willingness to connect with that energy, and to really basically, when someone is healed, whether they're using, medicines, or whether they're using pranic healing or Reiki or whatever healing modality is being used, it's all about helping that individual to access the wholeness energy inside of themselves. So some of it was up to him. You know, he had to say, yes, I want this. And I knew the instant he said yes. So I knew that was going to occur for him. It was just a matter of how long it was going to take.
Mm-hmm. You got to believe, though, right?
You do.
Mm-hmm. And I got to say that Penny Golden, just getting back to her, she has really done a lot of great things in the metaphysical community. I mean, she's really helped a lot of people out. We used to have an event, and she really helped us out, too, as well. And she does a great job in that respect.
She does, and she's so supportive of Unity of Livonia and other Unity churches and, really just of everyone in the metaphysical and healing community. And if you read the inside of her magazine, she talks about this being her mission, is to support this, and she does it in every way that she can. And I just can't thank her enough. She's a very special lady.
Mm-hmm. She is. And the fact that she keeps on giving is just amazing. So big kudos to her for doing that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So are you planning to keep this up, right? I mean, obviously, if it's a big fundraiser for you, you want to keep it going, right?
Oh, yeah. Everybody loves to. I mean, the volunteers love it. We certainly have more volunteers. Well, it needs more volunteers than anything else, but we have more volunteers for it than any of our other events, because I think the volunteers enjoy it as much as the participants. In fact, we've made arrangements with the organizations on either side of us for our volunteers to park, because we want to make sure we have enough room for the people visiting, for all of the participants who are coming to the event. And we have a lot of volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, you got to keep people happy, and you got to keep the vendors happy. You got to keep all the guests happy as well. And whatever you can do to make that simplified, that's got to happen, right?
Right. And certainly our capital fund is always, it always benefits from it. We have some ongoing building renovations. The first one of these was to help us with some pretty badly damaged roofs. And Unity of Livonia is an unusual building, and it has 7 flat roofs. And we have now replaced 3 of them completely and done some major renovations to another one. But that leaves us with about 3 more roofs to replace, a boiler that is 20-some years old, and vinyl siding that we would like to replace the wood siding with, and windows that need to be replaced. So there's a lot of things that capital fund goes to. So this event is a very special one in helping us accomplish those things.
Mm-hmm. No, that's very special. I mean, obviously, it'd be nice if you could just wave a magic wand and everything got repaired and everything, but that's not real life. You do have to have some money to take care of things. So, I mean, it's good that you have an event that helps you with that.
Sure, yeah. And sometimes, the magic wand, part of the magic wand is giving and getting out there and doing something. So what we're giving is an opportunity for the vendors and the participants to meet, and for people to experience an opportunity for bringing themselves together in body, mind, and spirit to experience wholeness and healing in a different way. Mm-hmm. And then what we receive, obviously, is the support we need to continue renovating our building.
Right. Well, I think that as a group, I mean, everybody involved, I mean, the people that attend the event, the vendors, the church staff, they all thrive on that, I think, and it just builds and builds, and it's a benefit for everybody at the end of the day, right?
It does. It's very exciting. So I can hardly wait.
Yeah. Well, I know it gets the adrenaline pumping when you're, you know, everybody's coming in and it's brand new and you got to get things, you know, organized and everything. You know, it can be frustrating, but in the long run, obviously, it pays off.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, Reverend Eileen, I want to thank you for being part of Metaphysically Speaking for this month. Thank you very much for doing the show, and good luck with your writing career and also with the festival that's coming up.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. I really appreciate being able to spend the time with you.
All right. Well, thank you. Okay, I am back, and I just want to thank my special guest for this month, Reverend Eileen Patra. She is the senior minister at Unity of Livonia, which is a spiritual center located in Livonia, Michigan. She's also an author. She's working on a book, and I guess she'll have other books in the future as well from what she was saying. So I wish her the best of luck in her career as an author and whatever else she decides to do in life. I wish her all the best. And something that Reverend Eileen mentioned was the Body, Mind, Spirit Festival coming up at Unity of Livonia. And this will be held Saturday, October 6th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the address there at Unity is 28660 Five Mile Road. That's located between Inkster and Middlebelt. And you might want to check out this festival. There's going to be a lot of vendors. There's going to be workshops, lectures, a lot of great stuff going on, so you might want to check out this event. Once again, that's the Body, Mind, Spirit Festival at Unity of Livonia, Saturday, October 6th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Right now, I want to do something that I have not done for a while on this program. I'm going to read a poem that I really, really like, and I've read it a few times before, but I have not done it for a while, so I want to convey this bit of wisdom. It's a poem called Don't Quit by Edgar Guest. When things go wrong, as they sometimes will, when the road you're trudging seems all uphill, when funds are low and debts are high, and you want to smile but have to sigh, when care is pressing you down a bit, rest if you must, but don't you quit. Life is queer with its twists and turns, as every one of us sometimes learns, and many a failure turns about when they might have won had they stuck it out. Don't give up, though the pace seems slow, you might succeed with another blow. Often the struggler has given up when they might have captured the victor's cup. And they learn too late when the knight slipped down how close they were to the golden crown. Success is often failure turned inside out, the silver tint of the clouds of doubt. And you never can tell how close you are and may be near when it seems so far. So stick to the fight when your heart is hit. It's when things seem worse that you must not quit. So those are great words of advice. Hope you can follow them. It's not always easy to do. I know sometimes it's easy just to quit and say, forget it, I'm going to do something else. But you can't always do that. I know we touched upon that with Reverend Eileen. And you can't just quit. You have to keep going on, face the fear, and continue the mission and accomplish what it is you're here for on the planet Earth. I know we talked about that a little bit with Reverend Eileen in terms of her writing and doing some of the things that, you know, frightened her and frightened other people. So again, please don't quit. Continue on, and hopefully you'll succeed in whatever it is you want to do. I would also like to thank my special producer this month, Mike D. He's helped me out quite a bit this month. I really, really appreciate all of his work. So thank you to Mike. And be sure to check me out next month on the third Tuesday of next month. I'm here every third Tuesday. So with all that being said, thank you for listening. Have a great day, everybody.
broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College.
This is WHFR
Dearborn.
Listener-supported, non-commercial radio, featuring local and independent artists.
Guys and dolls, you are at the Malt Shop with Daddy G, and we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the Malt Shop, where the jukebox is playing, the kids are dancing, and here we are, back in the 50s.